Welcome to the New American Dream Radio Show. Tonight, we have a Texas show. I juggled the schedule just so I could say it. We welcome two writers, both from that large state that's contributed so many interesting people. Not that I particularly liked all the people. W might be the worst one, although LBJ might have just been better at concealing what he did. Pretty good body of evidence says that he helped accelerate his ascension to the high office by offing his predecessor. Texas does come up with colorful people. Everything's bigger than life down there. No Texan will admit that anything anybody else has is bigger than his. That didn't sound quite right. I meant to be talking about things like cattle, plants, and cities, you know. And it's only natural they would have some bigger jerks there, too. But fortunately, the Texans we'll talk to tonight don't fit in that category. Matter of fact, they don't share too many other categories, except they're both writers and they're both from Texas. Well, they might both share that neither one is easily put into a tidy little niche. Black Olive is definitely farther from the mainstream than Luther. Anyhow, my focus lately has been on writers. I love to read, you know. I read so much that the reading interferes with the work I should be doing. I put off web development, editing, practically everything else with the excuse of a good ebook. Yeah, I said ebook. Mostly I read on the laptop these days. The nice thing is that my eyes are feeling tired. I can just zoom it in a little bit, make it nice and big. It makes its own light, too. You know, so I don't have to jump through hoops just to be able to see the words. Of course, there has to be power for the laptop, but and room for it, too. You know, well, there's always something. I've tried to bring some new and unusual writers to the show lately. But as listeners know, my co-host Mike Palachek is one of the most unusual characters to put pen to paper or keys to computer or whatever it is. I know he's working on something new, too. He's not sharing it with me yet. I look forward to seeing it, though. Sure enjoyed the last one, Johnny Moon. If any of you somehow missed it, you ought to go get a copy real soon. And now it seems only right that I hand the show off to my friend and co-host, Mike Palachek, an American writer.
Hey, Chuck. As you mentioned, tonight we're going to welcome Lou Antonelli and Bill Black Olive. Here's what I think. It's not possible to understand the world by looking up at the line of TVs on the front wall of the strip mall exercise room with all the elliptical machines and stationary bicycles. As Alice says, it would be nice if something would make sense for a change. That is possible, but not by watching TV while you ride a bicycle. There are things you will need to pay attention to. I had to shut the door. The cat was meowing. There are things you need to pay attention to that may at first seem as silly as trying to fit your fat 50-year-old butt down a rabbit hole. But if you do, you will learn about things. And if you learn about things, most people will tell you that you are entirely bonkers. But I'll tell you a secret. All the best people are. Perhaps what is hopeful to me is that the fight is on, and that there are fighters on our side, and that there is even an our side for us to be on in this crazy, boorish United States of America. It may sound like 1960s hippie crap to say it, but as it's turning out, the hippies of the 60s were our actual greatest generation. So I'd just like to say, let's just do the best we can today and every day and keep on keeping on. And here's something that you will not hear from the line of televisions above the elliptical machines and the weights and the power drink vending machine. But it is one of those things you can study and wonder about that might make things make sense for once. This is from Douglas Horn. Douglas Horn graduated from Ohio State University in 1974 with a BA in history and served as a junior officer in the U.S. Navy for 10 years, followed by 10 more years with the Navy as a civil servant in an anti-submarine warfare program, etc., etc. Horn was not only involved in the location and release of U.S. military records on Cuba and Vietnam policy from 61 to 64, but he played an integral role in conducting both interviews and formal depositions of witnesses and participants in JFK's autopsy at Bethesda Naval Hospital, and was also involved in joint efforts between the ARR to both digitally preserve the photographic images of the autopsy and to conduct an authenticity study of the Zapruder film in the National Archives. Anyway, after all that, Doug Horn, he says, why doesn't the government reopen the Kennedy case? Why doesn't the government admit there was a massive cover-up? Why doesn't it admit the Warren Commission was selling a fairy tale and that the House Committee on Assassination sold a revised version of the same fairy tale? I think the reason the government doesn't take action and hides behind a wall of silence today is because the whole subject is so radioactive that to get involved, there would be nothing but risk, blame, and exposure. If any president of the United States, well, if you put yourself in their shoes, politicians, senators, congressmen, any chief executive, as soon as they say anything about the Kennedy assassination, that would indicate they don't agree with the official version. It would raise a massive uproar, and people would then say, how can you say that? That's unpatriotic. Are you accusing the government of being involved in a coup, and are you accusing the government of covering up? And by the way, what are you going to do about it then? I think that everyone hides behind a wall of silence, quite frankly, out of cowardice. The cover-up of this assassination that was implemented in the 60s by guilty men and people who knew they were telling lies. But from the mid-70s on, the cover-up has been perpetuated by cowards. And that's been true since 1978. It's really tragic. People in this country don't need to be protected from the truth. We've had three assassinations in the 60s. Nobody believes the official stories on King, RFK, or JFK. We've had Vietnam, we've had Watergate, we've had Iran-Contra, and we had the lies about the weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. We don't need to be protected from the truth. We can handle the truth. If we can learn the truth, we can move forward with confidence and try to prevent those things from happening again. You're not ever going to find anyone in the U.S. government who wants to do anything with this case again. And Douglas Horn continuing, in South Africa, we had truth commissions, and people told the truth after apartheid was over, and at least people came to understand their own history a little better. They can't tell the truth because then nobody would pay their taxes, nobody would care about the military budget anymore, and everyone will get thrown out of office. We have a government that changes hands on the surface every 4 years and every 2 years and every 6 years, but which in reality isn't that much different from the previous one and is still pursuing the same macro interests at the expense of the needs of people. In the long run, we would be better for it. We would be more a mature country, a more understanding country, and better able to safeguard ourselves in the future if we knew exactly what went down in 63 and 68, and the government would fess up to it, and we could examine it and study it in detail. We would be much, much better off in the long run, because then we could move forward confidently and try to prevent such abuses in the future. Only in that way can we recover our respect as a people and move forward much wiser and more confident about where we should be heading in the future. And that's Douglas Horn, and that might as well be the manifesto of the New American Dream radio show, because that's exactly what we're trying to say, is that we need the truth, and without the truth, we really can't go on. We'll just get deeper and deeper into the mud. Well, folks, there is actually a they out there, and there is actually a you and a me and we. They, Bush, Obama, Clinton, and company, want us to be afraid, as they told us in the anthrax letters in 2001. We can do this, but we cannot be afraid.
What if we find that equality is the greatest gift that God gave humans? What if we find that no human being is an enemy of another human being?
That it has just been politics all along.
What if all politics and politicians were jettisoned from our planet? What if we lived simply through our great principles and universal ideals? What if we flowed our human life through the all-American founding of liberty and happiness for all? What if the American founding blueprint allowed us the right progress of all people, without sin for the religious and without error for the rational? What if we put money to work simply for the good stewardship of the planet and the caring of all people? What if our new oil on the planet is simply human creativity and that all energy is free, non-harmful, and universal? What if we governed ourselves without a master as the fulfillment of the American founders' vision? What if we decided it was love's turn on the planet? Join together here at thespiritualun.org and we will build that new world for the 99% of us. Thespiritualun.org.
Hi, I'm Barack Obama. How far we've come. They shot Martin Luther King Jr. on the balcony of the Lorraine Motel in Memphis because he was going to lead a poor people's march to Washington and get the streets fixed in Detroit. He was getting that close to changing America. That's why things had to go down like they did, man. To be reasonable. We're all intelligent people here. We see what's going on, the cultural realities, the signs. They'll kill me, too, if I don't do what they say. I don't want to die. I'll do whatever they say. I'll say whatever I'm told. My children are young. They should not die. They're not much older or younger than your children, right? Osama bin Laden's been buried at sea. 9/11 attacks were perpetrated by 19 Muslim hijackers with box cutters. See how far we've come? It's all good. See, when I smile and wave, that's our little signal for you to do what I say. Really, nobody gets hurt. Vote for me. Obama Biden, 2012. For hope. For change.
God bless the Grand Canyon. God bless Mount Rushmore and Grandpa and Grandma and Mom and Dad and Sally and Johnny. God bless the dead Iraqi kids and the dead Afghanistan kids and dead kids everywhere. God bless the Golden Gate Bridge and the Empire State Building and the Statue of Liberty. God bless Rover and Mr. Fluffles and Dixie and Miss Thompson, too. And God bless our soldiers and troops and bombs and bullets and ships and really big bombs and our president, too. And God bless me and you, too.
Our first guest tonight is Lou Antonelli, a writer from Texas. He's a very interesting guy. He's been writing since 2003 or so, and he's been quite prolific and quite successful too, which is nice, a nice change from some other people. He's had honorable mentions, I think 11 of them, in the year's best science fiction. I think he ran for vice president of Science Fiction Writers of America. And like my co-host, Mike Palachuk, he ran for the House of Representatives once. Of course, he ran as a Republican. We'll let him slide on that. Lou, I'd like to welcome you to the show.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we hear you.
I gave you an idea of what I had in mind to talk about. Let's start with who you are. I understand you're an editor for the newspaper down there?
Yeah, I'm the managing editor of the daily paper here in Mount Pleasant, Texas. We're a small city, about 15,000 people, halfway between Dallas and Little Rock, northeastern Texas. And we have a daily paper here, and that's my regular job. That's my day job. I'm the managing editor here.
Okay. You've been in journalism for a long time, I think.
Yeah, I basically started in high school and went to college and have worked in that, usually in small community newspapers. I enjoy the small town newspapering.
Well, I think it's great that you managed to keep a newspaper going. It's their life seems to be, you know, kind of numbered these days. Their days seem to be numbered these days.
Well, in large metropolitan areas and big cities, there's a lot of competition. you know, from the electronic media, and now you're also getting the proliferation of the internet. That's a problem. But one of the advantages here, this job, you know, I found is that we're the only daily paper in a 5-county area, and we actually have no real news competition. So in isolated markets like this, you can still be comfortable and prosperous.
Well, that's good to hear. What inspired you to start writing fiction for publication?
Well, about 10 years ago, I was kind of sitting on my hands. I had some time on my hands during the summer, and I was 45, and I was actually kind of thinking about midlife checklist. For some reason, I started thinking about, had I done all the stuff I wanted to do when I was young, you know? And one of them was, I'd always been a reader of science fiction, but I'd never actually written any, and I remembered that. And I said, wait a minute, I never set my hand to actually writing. So I got online and looked up some basic information, and I found a website where if you wrote a story, you could post it, and people would critique it for you, give you friendly feedback. So I tried that, and the initial response was positive, and I realized I actually, although I'd been writing nonfiction for so long, I thought I could try my hand at fiction, and I might enjoy it.
You found a lot of places to get published, and there are a lot of people liking your stuff. I hadn't really come across you until recently when I got a story in Daily Science Fiction. And it was a fascinating story called Great White Ship, historical fiction, alternate history, I should say, where these lighter-than-air ships had ended up being the ones that that flew. That was the story that got me to be aware of you and to ask you to be on the show.
Well, thank you. Well, that story got a pretty good reception. Pretty much all the comments were positive, and I personally enjoyed writing it. You know, since I have a regular job, I pretty much am a casual writer or a you know, avocational, and so I really write because I enjoy it. And when I get a sense of satisfaction out of my own story, you know, when I can sit back and read it and enjoy it myself, that makes it worthwhile. And I did enjoy that story by the time I was done with it. I think it was one of my better efforts.
Well, I read a few others after once I found you, and I've been enjoying them. How do you go about writing a story? How does the process work for you? This is something I like to ask just about all the writers on the show.
In my case, and of course everybody's different, in my case I usually need a hook, a piece of inspiration. I think I wrote in the notes that were published by Daily Science Fiction when they published Great White Ship, I wrote that one evening there was a violent thunderstorm here in East Texas that was so cataclysmic, it just crossed my mind. I said, my God, some of this thunder could tear the world apart. And the idea popped into my mind of a dimensional rift. I usually need a hook or an image or a conceit. And if I think about it and I begin to spin out possibilities, if they're viable, they'll stay with me. And then at some point later on down the line, I'll sit down and I'll be able to do a story. I don't outline. I pretty much write by the seat of my pants.
Mm-hmm. Have you written any novels or only short stories?
I've written a couple of books. Neither of them have been sold. I seem to have more difficulty. I need to grow as a writer to write in the novel length. With my background as a journalist, I've written short stories all my life because newspaper articles are short. I'm extremely comfortable in the short story length. And for me, writing something at 100,000 words just seems insurmountable. I've tried it a couple of times. I'm not quite satisfied with my efforts. I don't think the effort's wasted because whenever you write so extensively, you can always mine that material later on, but it's still something I have to work on in the future.
How have you managed to find so many paying markets and have such success?
Oh, that's just a matter of research. Research is something you have to work on constantly. And for one thing, I don't mind being published in smaller markets. There are some authors, I'm one of them. There are others like Jay Lake, who's a fairly prolific author. You know, there's the running gag, you know, we'll submit to anything that has a pulse. There are authors who, you know, if you've been published in Asimov's or professional publications, you see it's beneath you to print in a magazine that say might pay you $20. And I don't mind. My attitude is I write for the fun of it. I like it. Stories to be entertaining. So, you know, I've had a number of stories that were published in magazines that didn't pay anything, and I don't care. I enjoy the getting to know people and making fans, and you know, that doesn't bother me. I guess part of it is because I don't have the pressure on me since I work, you know, 9 to 5. I have a regular job, you know.
Right.
Money isn't my first consideration, but I'm not usual that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, I certainly hope you'll keep up the good work on that. It's been a pleasure visiting with you. I'd like you to sort of run down for our readers some of the places where they might find some of your stories.
Well, of course, Daily Science Fiction published Great White Ship in May, and Daily Science Fiction has about 4,500 subscribers, and when they publish a story, it goes out to the subscribers first, and then a week later, it will go up on their website. So, for instance, Great White Ship was published May 11th, and then it became public on the website on May 18th. Now, I had a story published June 11th called Double Exposure, which is one of my better stories, and it will be going up on the website, therefore, a week later, which would be June 18th. And that's a good story, too. So Daily Science Fiction is a good place to check. Checking Google pretty much and checking the archives. If you visit Wikipedia and you see my bibliography, and at this point I've had about 65 stories published over 9 years, you know, you can see some of the venues, and it's not too hard to find something.
Yeah. I would think that your blog might be a good place to start.
Well, that's true. I have links. My blog is louantonelli.blogspot.com, and I do have a specific menu item where I have links to stories that are archived online. Also, if you're interested, or if anyone is interested in reading collections, since I've written enough short stories, I've had two collections of short stories published. Fantastic Texas in 2009 and Texas and Other Planets in 2010, and you can go on Amazon and find those.
Okay. Well, it's been fun visiting with you, and I've kind of enjoyed the fact that we have two Texas writers on today, the other one being Bill Black Olive, and maybe we'll talk to you another time and maybe get you to read something for us.
Oh, I'd be more than happy to call anytime.
Okay. Thank you very much, Lou, and have a good night.
Okay, I enjoyed it. Thanks a lot.
WorldNewsTrust.com is a news site that is trying to define the new mainstream. Their founder, Francis Goodwin, is a veteran journalist who set out on his own a few years ago and has slowly carved out a niche. What does the site do? It tells the truth and provides a place for intelligent columnists to talk about what's really happening in America. It's a good site with people who care about what's going on in America and the world. It's a great site with many loyal writers, including Ramsey Baroud, Harvey Wasserman, Mickey Z. There are too many to list them all. Some content is published on World News Trust first, some is published elsewhere and copied to World News Trust. We also welcome back World News Trust, who continue to support our show and host our website. Visit World News Trust for a dose of news with enlightened and informed opinion. It's not like Fox or CNN or the New York Times. It's World News Trust, defining the new mainstream in online journalism. Visit them today and tell them the New American Dream Radio Show sent you. WorldNewsTrust.com. And now, back to the show with your hosts, Chuck Gregory and Mike Pelichek.
It's already 1974, after September 11th, 2001. After John Kennedy in Dallas, it's 1974, 11 years ago from 9/11. And from 1963 in Dallas, it's 2012. Next year will be 2013, 50 years from November 1963. It's all very confusing. It's supposed to be, right? We're supposed to not be able to understand what's happening, what is real history. If elections matter, or who controls what, or if poor people are poor on purpose, or that's just the way things are. 50 years and the papers still say Oswald killed JFK. Big-time actor Tom Hanks will make some big-time movies soon, and everyone will believe it even more. How long will it be before we catch up with the lies of September 11th, 2001? How long? How long?
Overseas bases. Germany, Korea, the Philippines, Iraq, Italy, Japan, Afghanistan. No, really, what are they for? Greece, Cuba, Spain. No, really, really. Thank you for your service. You guys are great. Yeah, real. Really, man, nice parade, cool flags. Hey, can I get one of them root beer floats? Ah, really? What do you do? Veterans Day, Armed Forces Day, 4th of July, Memorial Day, Flag Day, Welcome Home Vietnam Veterans Day, National Day of Honor, Month of the Military Child, Gold Star Wives Day, National Military Appreciation Month, Loyalty Day, Silver Star Service Banner Day, VE Day, VJ Day, Patriot Day, Gold Star Mother's Day, Day of the Deployed, National Military Family Month, Pearl Harbor Day. What more do you guys want? No. Really.
Now I'd like to welcome our second guest, Bill Black Olive. Bill Black Olive lives in Port Aransas, Texas, if I'm pronouncing that right. And I've been corresponding with Bill by email for years, it seems like. Now, Bill is a writer. He wrote The Emeryville War, I believe, and The Texas Gang, and perhaps more. And he's lived a very interesting life. And I'll be very interested to be able to visit with Bill Black Olive finally. I'd like to welcome old friend Bill Black Olive to the show. He's been on a couple times, and Bill is talking to us from his home in Port Aransas, Texas. I believe that's, it's on the Gulf Coast. Are you on the Gulf Coast, Bill?
Yes, that's right, Mike.
Okay, and you're a writer, and you had a very interesting life, and I hear a lot of static, but I guess I don't know where that's coming from. But anyway, Bill, you're very interested in current events, and you've got something on your mind that you want to talk to us about. Tell us that.
Well, I just wanted to say briefly that I've discovered I was checking out stuff from Jim Fetzer, and somehow I ran across this Richard D. Hall. I don't even remember how that happened, and then I could not find him later, but he's easy to Google. Richard Hall, can you hear that?
Yep.
Okay. He's a scientist, and he's got this great video where he's interviewing Judy Woods. So anyway, he's a scientist. He's hit 9/11 and all of this stuff, but as well, he's curious about UFOs, so he has a whole lot of information there, too. Anyway, that's all I have to say. I've just found him since yesterday. A lot of interesting material.
Hey, Bill, are you from Port Aransas, right?
Well, more or less, I went to grade school there, and I went to high school at Aransas Pass. Anyway, those two towns are next to one another, and my mother's house is in Aransas Pass.
And then you went to where did you go from there? Did you went to California?
Yeah, Mike, I've lived in California and New York in earlier years, and a lot of New Mexico. I'm very fond of New Mexico. You know, I'm just kind of wayward, maladjusted.
Okay, well, you've written and you've lived a long life. How old are you now?
I am 71. I have to stop.
71.
Yes, I've turned 71.
And you're still.
I'm kind of a freak. I don't look 71.
You're still very much interested in current events. So what encourages you, or what discourages you about what's going on right now?
It's disturbing. You know, as many of us are aware, we have a budding police state, and it's scary, and it has to be pointed out and disrupted. It has to be. One way or the other, it's got to be done.
Are you doing any writing now?
If we could just expose it, I have hope for the Jim Fetzer's material at the Vancouver the Vancouver talks going to have on the, I think, the 15th. Have a lot of people. Well, you know, I hope that they can somehow jerk those newspapers enough that they won't be so frightened about talking about what they will be talking about.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's got to bust into the mainstream news. The United States is just hard to believe. I'm very impatient, and years go by, but this has to be. It has to be pushed in while it can be.
Bill, would you like to do any name dropping? Did you know any of the old beats, any of the old writers that we may have heard of in your come across them in your days?
I'm sorry, Mike. What was your question?
I said, would you like to do any name dropping? Are there any famous names that people you may have run across in your days, your travels?
People I've known.
Beat writers.
Well, of course, I've met a few of even the old beatniks, you know. But and so I had this literary comment from William Burroughs, but. No, I don't really need to. I mean, I haven't known anybody too well. I've met various people, friends of friends.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I even met Ken Kesey before he died. I've met Ginsberg. I've met, you know, I was somewhat familiar with William Burroughs' son, Bill, before he died.
Are you doing any more writing these days, Bill?
What?
Are you doing any more writing?
I'm not really giving much time for that. I just entertain myself by scribbling these letters to people and posting them. You know, send my stuff to you and Chuck and other friends, and people can read it or not. You know.
Mm-hmm. Well, is there anything you want to tell us in closing? Do you get any words of wisdom? Anything you want to comment on current events or whatever?
Well, I think that the biggest current event coming is the Vancouver hearings with every these such as Jim Fetzer. I'm just really crazed. I want this to get out into the normal normal public realm. It's just incredible what has been done, and you know, of course, that's just one thing that's been done. A whole lot of things are being done. I'm very aggravated with the present war, you know, where you blast a bunch of people and maybe get somebody, but what they're doing, of course, is terrorizing. They're not that concerned with did they or did they not get some little so-called terrorist. These are not terrorists. You know, 9/11's bullshit. It's not even real that what they're giving as their excuse. That's very frustrating. In the excuse of 9/11, they're killing all these people. They're trying to get a real bulldog grip on that part of the country. And you can start naming the stuff they want. You can start with drugs, you know. Like with Latin America, it's cocaine, and in that area, it's heroin. But besides that, there's all these other minerals. The United States is wanting to control the world, or there is a body of people, many who are from the United States, wanting to control the world, and that's what's alarming. That's what has to be broken up. Somehow or the other.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you for talking to us tonight, and you have a good night,
yeah,
okay?
Sorry the reception's so bad.
Okay.
Well, I think this went okay, though. I can hear you okay.
All right. Bill, you have a good night, and thank you for talking to us, all right?
Okay, Mike. Thank you very much. Audio.
You bet. See you later. Bye.
Okay.
What does it mean to be free? What has the war economy done to the lives of Americans? Join others for all the solutions at thespiritualun.org, because another world is possible. No human being is an enemy of another human being. War is a manufactured and artificial state. There is another way to live in this world through a new system that is uplifting to all. Let's go to a higher love. What did Jesus really teach? Did he teach onward Christian soldiers and bomb one another? No. John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr., Abraham Lincoln, our founding fathers, and you, your neighbors, all reaching for the best part of the human spirit. TheSpiritualUN.org, come together with us, carrying forward this nation's founders' universal ideals through the rejection of revenge, aggression, racism, war, and the debt slavery system. Real men don't kill. War and the debt slavery system is a crime against us all, against God, against all life, and is not fit for a progressive world. Join together here at thespiritualun.org, and we will build that new world for the 99% of us, without any leaders, corrupt as they are, because in the new system that is uplifting to all, they aren't necessary anymore. thespiritualun.org.
Take it to the beach. Summer reading list. American Zeitgeist. What can you take with you from your busy life for this one chance at some time alone to really soak it all in? The sun. News. Really catch up on all that stuff so when you come back to the office, you'll be an even better you. Tan and informed. Ready to, well, just be a better American and thinner. Better parent and spouse and employee, better person overall. Something with some pop and excitement and current events and just a good read. Well, you know, there is something, I guess. Vancouver hearings, June 15 to 17. That's 9/11vancouverhearings.com. You could follow that even online, even if you take your laptop to the beach with you. But then you wouldn't be able to after that. Well, how about 50 Shades of Vampire Blood? The boy with a new Brighton tattoo. That new self-help book by that one guy, Six Superheroes Saved Sacramento. You'll be watching television after you listen to this radio program. Tonight's programming being brought to you by the CIA, the United States Army, the United States Navy, the FBI.
Hello, Chuck?
Yeah.
Chuck? You didn't finish that, but that's okay. I wanted to say something before we get into the news. Can you hear
just
me?
Just saying.
Uh-huh. There's an echo, and I don't know if it's coming from me or if it's coming from you or coming from Lynn, but I've heard it through on your side, and I don't know if it's... if you're not plugged in all the way or not. I just wanted to mention that.
I think usually Len keeps my voice from coming back to me. And right now it is coming back to me. So I'm hearing myself as well as everything else.
Okay. Len, can you hear that?
No, I don't hear any echo here, and I don't do anything.
Huh. Okay. I just saying, I hear an echo on Chuck's voice throughout most of the program.
I hear it, too.
You got your speakers on and a headset at the same time?
Let me move a little farther away from the speaker.
Well,
maybe that'll help.
Do you have a headset?
I have a mic on a headset, but my wife wants to hear it, so we have to have it on the speaker.
Well, don't do that.
I've been doing that for months.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay. Well.
Oh, okay. That's your echo.
You still hear it now?
No, that was
okay,
fine.
I just moved. Maybe I was too close to the speaker.
Okay. All right. Here we go. I'm going to start the news. Here we go. Well, it's been another long week in Mount Liberty, Nebraska, my hometown. On Monday morning at 2 in the morning, Bart Peterson dropped her kids off at Kids Corner Home Daycare so she can get the 3 a.m. shift at Thomas's Eggplant. Now she's got the 73 Ford Impala that her father had in high school, and now that he's passed, she gets it, and now it doesn't work. Barb works on the line with Luisa and Margaret Rosales, selecting eggs off a conveyor belt and placing them in packs of 12 and 18. They come from the 100,000 hens laying in the 12 barns up on the hill and shipped by that conveyor belt down the hill to the plant, and then by 7 a.m. they arrive miraculously at the cafe and the diner and Stop and Go. Barb's second job is at Stop and Go. She doesn't work there every day, but the days she does, she gets her mom or her sister to help with the kids. And one weekend a month, she works the weekend shift at a group home. Margaret is Luisa's daughter. They came to Mount Liberty from Agua Prieta, Mexico, crossed over at Douglas, Arizona, and they evaded the Minutemen and Border Patrol and walked up here. Margaret is a junior at Mount Liberty Senior High School and wants to go somewhere to study nursing.
In her used parka in the front pocket, Barb carried an unopened letter from her brother in Afghanistan. She put it there the day before when she got the mail. It was still there when she kissed her sleeping children goodbye this morning. At work, she hung up her coat when she put on her white apron. She grabbed the letter and shoved it into her back pocket, then hurried to tie the apron in back on her way to her station. She jabbered with Luisa. They laughed together about how they both would be there till they died, not a single day more.
Está, estás, estamos, están, Luisa said, and Barb repeated. She had asked Luisa to teach her. Barb thought about the call she had answered at home from the military recruiter about a year ago. Barb had stopped by to do some laundry and visit with her mother and let the kids run a little.
The recruiter, Sergeant Collison, something like that, had asked to speak to Seth. She knew who it was, and she still went to get her brother, all the while searching around the house that she knew what this would mean. She'd argued with Seth about signing up for the draft, for registering for the Selective Service. He'd said, "You know I have to. I don't have a choice. Not that big a deal. It's just something I have to do. Everybody does." "Oh, yeah, I know," she said. "Besides, if I don't, how can I get money for college? I want to go to college."
The 10 a.m. break, Barb walked with Louisa to the lunchroom along the hard-shined concrete. They stood in line at the vending machines. Barb's quarters fell through on her first try, but then she heard the thunk, and then her cheese and crackers slid down pretty as can be. They found their regular spot, first picnic table on the second row, north side bench, facing the coffee machine. Louisa began to speak to Margaret in Spanish. Barb unwrapped her crackers, began to crunch, and try to keep up with the conversation next to her, then reached to her back pocket. She studied the foreign postmark. She folded it again and began to return it to her back pocket. Then she sighed and set it again in front of her. She reached and pulled it out, unfolded it, and held it in front of her, recognizing the slope script as if she were seeing Seth's face right there in front of her.
The date was 2 weeks old. Her mouth quivered. Her lips moved as she read, "Dear Barbie, hey, how goes it? Long time no see. Oh, Susan Thumper, they keeping you hopping? I miss him. Miss you, too, a lot. Say hello to Mom. I'll write to her, too. If you get this first, tell her that hers is on the way, okay? Okay? This is something else there, sis. I'm not sure what's what. Maybe I haven't been here long enough, but well, it seems like forever."
Barb could hear Louisa talking, and she was aware of others getting up and sitting down around them, but she felt them from far away, from Afghanistan in the mountains with her little brother. They were playing wiffle ball in the backyard. She was throwing him her lefty super-de-duper curveball because you could do that with a wiffle ball, and nobody could hit a wiffle ball curveball, but Seth did. He hit this one way over the peony bushes and into the street, and they were just playing together, the two of them, so they had to chase their own hits. So Seth says, "I'll get it." And before she can say anything, he's running right past her on the pitcher's mound and across the yard and into the street. And this car that they couldn't see because the pickup was parked on the curb slams on its brakes and it squeals. And there's a sickening thud like cantaloupe on concrete. And she can't see anything because of the pickup. And she screams and runs and finds Seth on the pavement. He's out of breath and his leg is bleeding where the car grill cut him. And he's smiling. And he lay there bleeding and making Barb and the driver feel all right. But he wasn't really hurt, and he was okay, and it was his fault. He shouldn't have run into the street. Barb had just gotten her license and drove him to the hospital for stitches and took him off her ice cream and said that he should never have run off like that. "I could have gotten it," she said. "No, it's okay," he said. "I wanted to, no problem. Don't worry about it."
Barb read the front of the letter and turned it over. Turned it over again, read the front again, and slowly she turned it over again to read the back of the letter. She read about the routine of military life, the complexities, the inconveniences, the rules, the weather, and the people. And she read about dead people. There have been casualties. "We got hit. Two of our guys were killed outright. Three were wounded, one pretty bad. I'm okay. Barb, I killed somebody. God, Barbara, I shot someone dead." I walked up to him. He just lay there. I couldn't make him get up. He just lay there. He would not get up. He was dead. He had a dead face and dead eyes and dead hands. And his feet were dead. I touched him with my boot, and I pushed a little more. Then I was angry at him for being dead, and I just squatted down, and I cried. I cried because I knew I was ruined. This would never be all right. This would never be over. It would never be the same. Nobody could ever make it all right. I killed someone. I'm afraid I'm dead too. I'm scared, Barbara. I'm dead, but I have to keep on living. I'm not sure I can do that. Might be too much work. I'm scared. I'm really, really scared. Please help me.
Barbara read the last few paragraphs but didn't really see the words. Louisa nudged her, and they were up, tossing their trash and pushing out the doors into the noise of the plant. Louisa was still visiting with Margaret. Barb turned away to wipe her eyes with her entire arm. Margaret worked for a little while longer, then left for school. On Tuesdays and Thursdays, she stayed until almost noon. At the end of the day, Barb was happy because she didn't have to go to Stop and Go today. She took her one free carton of eggs that she was allowed and headed for the Impala, praying it would start, then skidded off to get her kids. That night, Barb read the children a book and tucked them in. She kissed them. Buenas noches, she smiled. Buenas noches, Mom. Good night, they yelled. Shh, she said. Good night, good night.
Barb walked herself downstairs one step at a time by the wooden handrail, went to the kitchen. She reached for the Diet Coke that had been calling her name and brought it with her to the table where Seth's letter sat next to the envelope. Barb read it again, then reached into the basket by the table for the phone book. She found the C's, ran her fingers slowly down and up the lines. Collison, Collinson, Collinson. 709 9th Street, she said to herself. She killed her drink and returned to the refrigerator, bent down to pull something out, let the door close on its own. She stuck her head in the door of the kids' room, then tiptoed in. She hunched down to see that both were breathing and sleeping. She hurried out, leaving the door open a crack. Barb hurried to her car, started it, and sped off. It's only two blocks, she told herself. Three, only three. She leaned over to get the flashlight from the glove compartment, shined the light on the house numbers as she puttered along. 705, 707, 709. She stopped, got out with her carton of eggs. She walked slowly toward the house, holding the carton in her right hand, grabbing and firing with her left hand. Boom, boom, boom. She walked. She fired till she was out of ammunition, dropped the empty carton on the walk in front of the house, and walked back to her car. She went home and ducked back into the children's room. They were still sleeping, unaware of all that was going on outside at this very moment. Barb smiled to herself in the dark. She pressed her back into the wall and let herself slide down to sit. She sat there in the dark in her children's room, listening to them sleep. And she smiled. She breathed a deep breath, and all was okay for a while.
And that's the news from Mount Liberty, where all the soldiers are thugs, all the Democrats are cowards, and all the Homeland Security COINTELPRO journalists are about average.
Our profiles in heart to those who've given or are still giving their heart and soul, helping us all have a better world. Our thanks for caring. And remember, Mr. Byron does not teach American history in room 203 at 10 a.m. in Sheboygan. He didn't yesterday. He won't tomorrow or never. Mr. Byron doesn't know anything about American history. He does not want to. That's why he's been there for 33 years. If any of these names are not familiar, give them a Google search. And again, our thanks.
Daniel Berrigan.
Phil Berrigan.
Liz McAllister.
Molly Rush.
Leonard Peltier.
Larry Rosebaugh.
Carl Cabot.
Mort Saul.
Helen Woodson.
George Carlin.
James Douglas.
Robert Kennedy.
Howard Zinn.
Bob McElvain.
Jim Fetzer.
Kevin Barrett.
Dick Gregory.
Lenny Bruce.
Bill Hicks.
Lori Berenson.
Julia Butterfly Hill.
Karen Kutkowski.
Anna Mae Aquash.
Jim Garrison.
Ralph Nader.
Peter DeMott.
John Ross.
Randy Weaver.
Pedro Bissonette.
Dorothy Kilgallen. We thank you for listening to this episode of the New American Dream Radio Show. We hope you'll stay tuned for Black Op Radio with our producer, Lena Sanek, coming up next. Remember to check out worldnewstrust.com, thespiritualun.org, and June2508.com. Those are our three sponsors. We appreciate them. And we hope if any of you are out there listening, feel like you might be able to help out, maybe you can pitch in something so that they don't have to do it all. Stop it back again next time, next week. Same time, same place. Thank you and good night, Mike.
Good night, Chuck. Stay warm down there. And good night, Mrs. Calabash. Good night, Todd Beamer. And good night, Barbara Olson, wherever you are.
What if we find that equality is the greatest gift that God gave humans? What if we find that no human being is an enemy of another human being if it's just been politics all along? What if all politics and politicians were jettisoned from our planet? What if we lived simply through our great principles and universal ideals? What if we flowed our human life through all American founding of liberty and happiness for all? What if the American founding blueprint allowed us the right progress of all people, without sin for the religious and without error for the rational? What if we put money to work simply for the good stewardship of the planet and the caring of all people? What if our new oil on the planet is simply human creativity and that is all energy free, non-harmful, and universal? What if we governed ourselves without a master as the fulfillment of the American Founders' version? What if we decided it was love's turn on the planet? Join together here at thespiritualun.org and we will build that new world for the 99% of us. Thespiritualun.org. WorldNewsTrust.com is a new site that is trying to define the new mainstream. Their founder, Francis Goodwin, is a veteran journalist who set out on his own a few years ago and has slowly carved out a niche. What does the site do? It tells the truth and provides a place for intelligent columnists to talk about what's really happening in America. It's a good site with people who care about what's going on in America and the world. It's a great site with many loyal writers, including Ramsey Baroud, Harvey Wasserman, Mickey Z. There are too many to list them all. Some content is published on World News Trust first, some is published elsewhere and copied to World News Trust. We also welcome back World News Trust, who continue to support our show and host our website. Visit World News Trust for a dose of news with enlightened and informed opinion. It's not like Fox or CNN or the New York Times. It's World News Trust, defining the new mainstream in online journalism. Visit them today and tell them the New American Dream Radio Show sent you. WorldNewsTrust.com. What does it mean to be free? What has the war economy done to the lives of Americans? Join others for all the solutions at thespiritualun.org because another world is possible. No human being is an enemy of another human being. War is a manufactured and artificial state. There is another way to live in this world through a new system that is uplifting to all. Let's go to a higher love. What did Jesus really teach? Did he teach onward Christian soldiers and bomb one another? No. John F. Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, Mahatma Gandhi, Martin Luther King Jr., Abraham Lincoln, our founding fathers, and you, your neighbors, all reaching for the best part of the human spirit. TheSpiritualUN.org, come together with us, carrying forward this nation's founders' universal ideals through the rejection of revenge, aggression, racism, war, and the debt slavery system. Real men don't kill. War and the debt slavery system is a crime against us all, against God, against all life, and is not fit for a progressive world. Join together here at thespiritualun.org, and we will build that new world for the 99% of us, without any leaders, corrupt as they are, because in the new system that is uplifting to all, they aren't necessary anymore. Thespiritualun.org.